From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson.
Our country is facing serious energy problems.
In the 70s, the energy crisis brought America to its knees. We had to come up with a solution. So visionaries in the oil industry drove their teams hard. And it worked. America is now in the midst of an energy boom. But at what cost?
I saw the 350-foot inferno and a large cloud of black smoke.
And I'm like, ooh, this is where the accident was, you know.
And I seen a man walk in the field, and he was burnt. All he had on was his underwear holding it up. And he just said, they're over there. The scenery changes. It's as if I'm there. It rules my life.
The true cost of the power struggle. That's coming up on Reveal.
Reveal is supported by Casper, who delivers an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. In fact, Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that on to the customer. They offer a risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. It's an American-made mattress, starting from $500 for a twin and $950 for a king. Reveal listeners get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/reveal and using promo code REVEAL at checkout.
Today, we're going to talk about an American dream, a dream that not so long ago seemed impossible, but which is coming true as we speak, and bringing with it some unintended consequences. Let's go back in time for a moment.
It was announced today that gasless Sundays will go into effect as of next month.
It's 1973. OPEC, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, has announced an oil embargo. And in the U.S., gas prices have shot way, way up. There are shortages. At gas stations across the country, cars are lining up, sometimes around the block, waiting to fill their tanks.
The lines were long, about an hour and a half long. I see some.
America had become hooked on cheap gas from Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia. And those countries decided to turn the situation to their political advantage. America was in a panic and longed for energy independence, a fantasy that could set straight the economy and restore our way of life. 4 decades later, and that fantasy has become reality.
The United States is moving towards becoming an energy exporter.
Today, the U.S. is producing so much energy that we've surpassed the Saudis, and we're now the world's leader in combined oil and natural gas production. But along with the good news comes a new set of challenges. The bonanza in oil and gas is raising concerns about the environment, worker safety, even earthquakes. And that's what we're going to explore over the next few weeks. We start in North Dakota, where hydraulic fracturing has opened up huge new reservoirs of oil and gas. But the work is dangerous, it moves fast, and now it's one of the deadliest places in the country for workers. We've been investigating this issue and found that since 2006, at least 74 people have died in the Bakken oil fields of North Dakota, Montana, and Canada. That means that someone dies about every 6 weeks on average. This is the first comprehensive accounting of oil boom deaths using Canadian and U.S. data. Jennifer Gollin, a reporter here at Reveal, has been leading our investigation. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Al.
So you really dug into one accident to understand why these workers are dying and how companies are kind of sidestepping responsibility for it. Tell us about it.
Well, the accident happened back in 2011. It was actually the deadliest accident in the Bakken since the start of the boom. And to explain what happened, let me introduce you to Jebediah Jesse Stanfill. He often goes by Jesse.
Taking off my work gloves and putting on the gloves that I use when I'm going to deal with food.
Jesse used to work in North Dakota, but now he lives in Alabama. He's a guy in his 30s. He has a black goatee and he often wears a trucker's cap. And the only sign that there's something a little bit different about him are these gloves that he wears.
Three pairs that I typically have around me. My work pair, my everyday pair, which are just a pair of those, but clean, and then my rubber gloves.
We met Jesse at his grandmother's house, and he was making lunch with these gloves on. He wears them almost all the time, when he's around the house, when he's playing with his kids. And he wears them because he says that looking at his hands triggers one of his worst memories.
How can a simple thing like looking at your hands or washing your hands send you completely enveloped back to that day. Like, the scenery changes. It's as if I'm there, not right here making chicken and dumplings. It rules my life.
So what happened to him?
Well, 4 years ago, Jesse went to work in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota. He had his second son on the way, and like a lot of young men, he was drawn there for the adventure and the money. So one day, Jesse's near the top of this oil rig, and suddenly he hears this huge boom from less than a mile away.
I saw the 350-foot inferno and a large cloud of black smoke.
He scrambles to the bottom of the rig, and he sees that it's the neighboring rig. It's on fire. He grabs a fire extinguisher and a first aid kit, and he jumps in this truck and races over with two coworkers.
And what does he see when he actually gets to the rig?
The scene is, he gets there, and it's almost post-apocalyptic. There's smoke and flames everywhere, and there are these workers totally dazed and charred, black.
And I've seen a man walk in the field, and he was burnt. All he had on was his underwear holding it up. And he just said, "They're over there."
Jesse heads in that direction. He learns that one guy has died in the explosion, and he finds two other men very badly burned. He helps lift one of them up, and when he does, the men's burnt skin comes off in his hands.
And I look down at my hands, and I try to get it off of me by rubbing it on my chest.
That's why Jesse wears the gloves. That memory of the man's skin coming off in his palms, he just can't shake it.
And the only thing I have found is wearing these stupid gloves. These gloves that people constantly ask me why I'm wearing them.
I asked him, "What do you tell them?" And he said this thing that I'll never forget.
"Watch a man burn and see what you do."
Well, it sounds like a lot of people were hurt that day.
You're right. Two men were killed, and one was so badly burned, he had to have his lower legs amputated. He ended up killing himself 2 years later. Only one man survived.
So who was responsible for it? Who owns this site?
So a company called Oasis Petroleum North America owns the site. They're one of the biggest producers in the Bakken. But the question of responsibility, it's really more complicated.
Wait, how is it more complicated? If they own the site, that feels pretty cut and dry. They should be responsible, right?
You would think so, but energy producers have figured out ways to avoid responsibility when workers are injured or killed. And that's one of the reasons, in fact, why we went to North Dakota, is to sort out how.
When news breaks, we're on it. Your news and information source for Williston and the Bakken. The new Keys AM 660.
On one of the days I was there, a guy named Dennis Schmitz took me on a tour of the Bakken oil patch. He's worked in the oil fields for the last 15 years, and now he heads this group called the Mondax Safety Network that promotes workplace safety in the Bakken.
So this is the booming metropolis of Watford City, North Dakota. This really is kind of the center of the boom.
So there are a couple of obvious reasons for the dangers in the Bakken. Oil and gas can be explosive. There's heavy machinery everywhere. And on top of that, safety experts like Dennis Schmitz say that a lot of companies care about speed over safety.
When you look at the culture over the last 5 or 6 years, the culture has really been more based on production and getting things done than doing things the right way or a safe way. It's all about making money.
Even though the work is dangerous, federal oversight is spotty. For starters, there is no federal safety standard that applies specifically to oil and gas. Instead, regulators rely on standards written by the industry itself, by groups like the American Petroleum Institute. It's a unique situation that other dangerous industries like construction or mining don't enjoy. They have to follow strict federal safety rules that cover specific hazards. To make things even more complicated, there's the business side. You have the major energy companies that typically own or operate the wells, but they usually rely on contractors to do the actual work on their sites. That means when something goes wrong, it's hard for regulators to find the top company. These are the big corporations we're talking about, because they often don't have direct employees on the sites.
We need to start looking at each piece of the puzzle and who's responsible for what and who owns what.
Justin Williams is this tall guy. He wears ostrich leather boots. And for decades, he was a corporate attorney for some of the biggest oil companies in the world. Then something happened.
The beginning of 2008, I developed pancreatic cancer and my life changed. Wanted a little bit more purpose in my life than representing corporate America.
So he essentially switched sides. Now he represents injured oil workers and their families, including two of the men hurt or killed in the Oasis explosion. The way that Justin sees it, energy companies are ducking responsibility when mistakes happen, and they're doing it in a couple of different ways. Contracts, which we'll get to in a little bit, and one guy, the company man.
He is the eyes and ears of the company on location.
So you might assume the company man is an employee of the company. And in fact, decades ago, that's how it used to be. But then companies came up with a new idea.
We don't have to keep these people on our payroll when we're not drilling a well or working over a well. We'll hire consultants.
So now most company men are independent contractors, like a lot of the workers on these sites. And that is very key because it allows the company to distance itself when something goes wrong. So let's look at how that played out in the Oasis accident.
What's your first name?
Lauren.
Lauren?
On the day of the accident in 2011, the company man for Oasis was a guy named Lauren Baltrush. Baltrush declined to speak with us, but you're hearing him here in this video. It was shot by the McKenzie County Sheriff's Department just after the explosion.
Just kind of give me a brief overview of the day and tell me what happened, if you would.
Okay, well,
the best of your ability.
That day, Lauren was overseeing a crew from Carlson Well Service, a small oil service company. Carlson declined to talk with us, but the company was hired by Oasis to get the well to produce more.
The water on it this morning and got the rig out there.
Before the Carlson crew could get started, Oasis had to make sure that the well was safe to work on. And records show they injected thousands of gallons of salt water into the well to eliminate pressure from the gas. But when the Carlson guys started working on it, it blew.
And I turned around and them guys were burning all over the place. They were running around and trying to get themselves out so I wouldn't started putting out fires on them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible deal.
Oasis said in a statement that the company man arranged and oversaw the saltwater injections and that the well was safe to work on when the Carlson men started. Oasis says the explosion was caused by a sudden, unexpected flow of gas. But attorney Justin Williams says one of the men working that day warned Lauren, the company man, that the well was unsafe.
And he said, I told Lauren that it needed to be closed in and we needed to get away from it. And I told him three times.
In a claim against Oasis, Justin argued the company had acted negligently. He said that the company man was at fault for the explosion and he was operating under direct orders from Oasis itself.
Oh, looks like you
there's an exchange in the sheriff's video that highlights the close connection between the company and the company man. Towards the end, someone comes up and interrupts the interview. He says to Lauren, the guys in Houston are calling. Oasis's headquarters are in Houston.
Okay.
Hey, Lauren, that's the guys in Houston. They're very concerned about you. You need to get checked out.
Right.
Yeah, we haven't even had him into. Yeah. You got smoke inhalation. You got what you've been through.
Well, we're pretty much just about done here.
Yeah, we need to get you. I know you're not in the right frame here.
After the accident, federal regulators didn't fine Oasis. Instead, they fined Carlson, the subcontractor, in part for not having the right safety equipment that day. But here's the thing: that safety equipment, it would not have prevented the accident in the first place. And when it came to paying money to the victims and their families, Oasis got Carlson's insurance company to cover some of the cost, and that's by design. So what I have here is the contract that Carlson signed with Oasis. It includes certain protections, including what's called an indemnity clause. Almost every contract involving major energy producers in North Dakota has one of these, and it basically says if something goes wrong, the company can offload its liability. Often workers and their families aren't even aware of all this legalese, like the parents of Brendan Wegner. He was one of the men killed in the Oasis explosion in 2011. I went to Wisconsin to meet them, and Brendan's dad showed me around his backyard where there's this huge wooden pole.
We put a rope up in a tree and we use a tractor to pull it up there, and we set it all by hand. And
it stretches up above the roof of the house. Kevin Wegner's an electrical lineman, and he always thought Brendan would go into the family trade. So he set up this pole for him to practice.
How much time did you guys spend talking about safety?
I taught him, when you come up to a pole, you thump it. If you're in question, you dig down, you drive a screwdriver into it to make sure it's not rotted. It's just something you just don't run up and do. You got to put some thought into it.
Do you think if he'd stayed behind in Wisconsin, he would have followed in your footsteps and continued as an electrical lineman?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. Whether that or farming, he would have been happy either way. Yeah.
Do you think about that much?
Oh, I do. I guess I wish I wouldn't have pushed him out to North Dakota and just kept him close to home.
Brendan's experience on this pole actually helped him get the job in North Dakota. He was comfortable around heights, and it's one reason he was hired. But his first day on the rig, he died.
Jennifer Gollin, thank you for that story. Before you go, did you get a chance to talk to Oasis Petroleum? What does the company have to say?
Well, the company declined to make any officials available for an interview. Instead, they gave me this written statement that said any suggestion that the company or its company man knowingly put workers in danger is patently false, and that the company really values worker safety.
And did you visit the site where the accident happened?
I did.
So what was that like? What does it look like now?
Well, when we got there, it was this windswept bluff, and the wreckage from the accident that day had been cleared away. But we did see this new rig that had started drilling shortly before we got there. The site was overseen by an Oasis company man named Bruce Jorgensen. His connection to the accident that day was uncanny. It turns out that when the explosion happened, he was working on the same nearby site as Jesse Stanfill, that guy with the gloves.
And what did he have to say?
I think he was rattled when he realized he was back on the same site where these guys had died.
And I'm like, ooh, this is where the accident was, I haven't talked to any of the rig hands about it yet, but I didn't want them freaked out by it anyway, wanted their mind on what we were doing.
Bruce has this interesting perspective. He's worked in the oil fields for years, and he's worked his way from the bottom up to the top. And he says the safety culture in the oil fields has gotten better, but that some companies preach safety and don't follow through. Back when he was a rig hand, he faced that.
I had to do it when I was a tool pusher. I had to tell company men, whoa, we're working. We're getting it done. But we're not going to get it done any faster with you standing here screaming at us. Don't make it get worse, Let us do our job.
I got the sense that Bruce has been permanently shaped by the lessons he's learned in the oil fields. And on the Oasis site, he was reminded every day of what's at stake. Right at the edge of the property, stuck in the red clay, there was this simple wood cross. It's a memorial for Brendan Wegner.
That's Reveal's Jennifer Gollin. The story was produced by Delaney Hall. Recently, North Dakota has seen a slowdown in oil production. With oil prices collapsing over the last year, some regulators are worried energy companies are cutting safety corners even more. 13 workers have died since the beginning of last year alone. To read more of Jennifer's investigation and to see images from North Dakota, visit revealnews.org. Check back with us next Tuesday for another podcast. We'll be profiling George Mitchell, the guy who invented modern fracking, plus the story of a group of train spotters who are tracking oil trains. If you have a minute, let us know what you think about the show. Leave us a review on iTunes. It makes a big difference and helps new listeners find us. You can also tweet us at Reveal or share your thoughts on our Facebook page. And remember, we're also on the air. Check with your local NPR stations to see what time they're airing us. And if they're not, let them know you'd like to hear us. Our show was edited this month by Taki Telenitis and is produced by Julia B. Chan, Delaney Hall, Michael Montgomery, Nina Satija, Ike Sriskandaraja, and Amy Walters. Thanks to editors Fernando Diaz and Jennifer LaFleur. Our lead sound designer and engineer is Mr. J. Breezy Jim Briggs. Our editorial director is Robert Saladay, and our managing director is Krista Scharfenberg. Deb George is our senior editor, Suzanne Weber is our executive editor, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music today was provided by Camarado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Riva and David Logan Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Ledson, and remember, there is always more to the story.